Mingalaba to everybody. So to start the Dhamma talk, we will recite the Namo Tassa three times in Pali. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. In today's Dhamma talk, I want to talk about something that for most meditators is quite an issue. It's about thoughts, thinking. The mind likes to think, at least mine does. But as I have come to know over the past years while sharing the Dhamma, I have come to know and see that most other minds do like it as well. I think you all can relate to this. And the ability of the mind to think seems to have no boundaries. You know, the mind can come up with all sorts of thoughts. Can be kind thoughts, cruel thoughts, loving thoughts, greedy thoughts, joyful thoughts, generous thoughts, murderous thoughts, trivial thoughts, useless thoughts, and so on. The list could go on. So these thoughts can either be uplifting and take us up to heaven, or they can be depressing, taking us down into hell. The nature of the mind is to think, to produce thoughts, and the mind does this in abundance, most of the time more than we like it. When I started to practice meditation many, many, many years ago, I thought that the aim of meditation was to get rid of thoughts and to be able to sit in sitting meditation without pain or any physical discomfort. So this was my notion of enlightenment. After about 3 years of meditating, having set a number of retreats, having attended a weekly meditation group, I was able to sit for about 1 hour with more or less no physical discomfort. So I thought I was already quite close to enlightenment. Well, the issue with the thoughts was another topic. There were still many thoughts, and actually, I was quite shocked to realize how much the mind was thinking. I had not been aware before that there is this almost endless train of thoughts happening in the mind. But somehow I was confident enough to think that maybe in another 3 years' time, I would be able to tackle that problem as well. And then I would be enlightened, and then I could put away the meditation. But, you know, now, almost like or 40 years later in my practice, I have come to a more realistic understanding of what the practice of meditation is all about, and what liberation is, or full awakening. And, you know, I can tell you a little secret. I still experience physical discomfort and pain, and there are still thoughts. And as I mentioned this morning, also the Buddha, as the Buddha, after he had become fully awakened, he also still experienced physical discomfort or pain, like the back pain he had, or the headaches he had, and other unpleasant, painful sensations that he was experiencing. So the more realistic picture of practice that I have come to understand includes things like wanting to get rid of the thoughts is not the way out of suffering. Wanting to get rid of them is actually creating just more tensions, much more frustration and agitation, resistance and suffering. And I'd come to realize that it is actually impossible not to have any unpleasant or painful sensations at all. And also that thoughts are happening, that I cannot completely get rid of them. I've also come to understand that the practice is not so much about the thoughts in themselves, but the attitude we have towards the thoughts, and that it is about getting to know the thoughts, getting to know the thought process as such. So actually to understand the nature of thoughts. And when we understand the nature of thoughts, we also come to understand the nature of the mind, because thoughts are a mental process. They manifest in the mind. You know, thoughts are like clouds passing on the sky. I think all of you have, you know, maybe in summertime, been lying on the ground, on the grass, looking up in the sky and seeing the clouds passing by, you know, clouds, little clouds, big clouds, and observing them, seeing how they are not static, but how they change their forms constantly, getting bigger, getting smaller, changing their shape. Or sometimes we can watch how a cloud dissolves, is completely gone. And even if the sky is completely covered with clouds, like a gray layer of clouds, if we cannot see one blue spot of the sky, but actually we know that the blue sky is still there. And eventually, when this layer of gray clouds has disappeared, there we have again the blue sky. And so likewise with our thoughts, when we pay attention to them, we see that these thoughts are also nothing static, but that they are in a process of constant change. You know, flowing, and like also like the thoughts, like changing intensity, becoming bigger, becoming smaller, being rough or being smooth, coming and going. And like as with the sky, once the thought has disappeared, then there is again the mind unsoiled by a thought. Then the mind is again clear. So like myself, I've come to know that many meditators, and especially beginners, they think that thoughts should not be happening during meditation practice. And often then they equate a meditation session with little thoughts as a good meditation, and a meditation session with many thoughts as a bad meditation. And so the common attitude or reaction towards thoughts happening in meditation is one of dislike, not wanting them, one of frustration or resistance or aversion, or then worry comes up. So the general reaction is like, thoughts should not arise in meditation, and if they do, I have to get rid of them. So usually thoughts are seen as an enemy, and of course an enemy needs to be eliminated. In the individual practice interviews, I also often hear a comment like, "Ah, I still have thoughts." When I hear such a comment, then I think, very good that you have thoughts, that you are still able to think. But of course, I don't say that. You know, imagine what would happen if you were able to get rid of all your thoughts, you know, also including the useful and necessary ones. So this general attitude of dislike, thinking, not wanting it, aversion towards it, this then is also coupled with judgment about ourselves, like having thoughts, having many thoughts, then we judge ourselves to be a bad meditator, or we think that we cannot do the practice right, or judgments about the thoughts. You know, they are bad, thoughts are a nuisance, or thoughts, they are counterproductive, or considering thoughts to be one's enemies, and as such, needing to get rid of them or to eliminate them. So in order to progress in our meditation practice, we really need to create a more conducive environment regarding thoughts. And so to this end, we must carefully observe the thoughts and the thought processes so that we really come to a deep understanding of what these thoughts, these thought processes are. So we need to understand the nature of thoughts in particular, and to understand the nature of the mind in general. So when we really start to look at the thoughts, be aware of the thinking mind as it is happening, what do we discover? What do we come to see? So first of all, we come to see that thoughts are coming and going. I know this may seem very trivial, very obvious. We also see that thoughts are a part of our experience, just as the breath is part of our experience, emotions are part of our experience, physical sensations are part of our experience. We also come to discover that thoughts are not the self. And we see that the basic nature of the mind is clarity. So that when thoughts have arisen and then disappeared again, this clarity is not diminished by a thought. It is not soiled. While the thought is happening, yes, then it's like a cloud in the sky. But after that, the thought is gone, leaving no traces. Or else the mind can be compared to water. Water which is in essence clear and clean. But of course, when the water is dirty, there might be mud or sediment or other impurities, yeah, then the water is no longer clear and clean. But if we leave the sediments settle, then the water becomes clear and clean again. You know, if the basic nature of the water was not to be clean, clear, then yeah, the settling of the mud could not bring about this clear water. So if we really launch ourselves into this project of observing thoughts a bit more closely, then first of all, we have to befriend our thoughts. We have to make really friends with them. Because only if we have a friendly or benevolent attitude towards the thoughts, will we be willing to have a closer look at them. And then we will be willing to really engage with them. So we really first need to be at ease with our thoughts, with the thinking mind. If you're not at ease with them, then we are in this position of maybe fighting them, or maybe we are slaves of our thoughts. So we really have to be careful that our lives are not run by our thoughts. So what can we come to see and understand in regard to thoughts, the thinking processes? So first of all, we come to see that thinking is a natural function of the mind, something it simply does. The mind has the capacity to think. You know, it's like the eye has the capacity to see forms and colors, or the ear has the capacity to hear sounds, voices, melodies, and so on. Or the nose has the capacity to smell fragrances, odors. A And likewise, the mind, as one of the six sense organs, has this capacity to think, reflect, ponder, whatever, but thinking as the most general term of this mental activity. We also come to see and understand that the capacity to think is helpful on a relative level. It's very useful. It's very useful for our lives. You know, for example, to be part of this retreat, I'm sure you had to think a few thoughts to make it possible to plan and organize, to put everything in place so that you can be at home and do this retreat. So we need to see the usefulness of this capacity of the mind to think. And the usefulness can also be seen in the fact that some of the meditations use this ability to think. For example, metta meditation. Here we use metta phrases to express our heart's wish for the welfare and happiness of all beings. So, you know, when we do the metta and say, may my teacher be well, happy and peaceful. So here we make use of this ability to think. And of course, there are other meditations in the Buddha's teaching which use this ability, you know, thinking. For example, like Buddhanusati, the recollection of the Buddha's attributes, or Maranasati, the recollection of death, and many more. What we also come to see and experience very directly is the speed with which thoughts appear. You know, it's like lightning, boop, a thought is here. And, you know, the thoughts, very often they are based on our habits or based on our general attitude. For example, I'm walking outside down the street and there comes a woman wearing a nice coat, and seeing her, immediately the thought pops up, wow, that's a nice coat. I would like to have one too. So, you know, that's kind of a greedy thought, wanting that coat. Or maybe in a meditation retreat, we walk into the dining hall and we smell soya sauce, which was put on some dish. And then the thought may pop up, oh no, don't they know I don't like the soya sauce? So, you know, these thoughts are based on aversion, not liking. Or, you know, maybe we are changing our clothes, putting on a shirt, and realizing then a thought such as, the weather patterns are really changing, and tomorrow I need to ride a car to my aunt for her 80th birthday, and I need to pull the weeds as well in my garden. So, you know, these kinds of thoughts based on delusion, you know, just these trivial thoughts, the mind just wanting to entertain itself a little bit. And of course, in an intensive meditation retreat, these habitual thought patterns are also happening, but probably we will become more aware of them. In our day-to-day life, they kind of often run in the back of the mind. but we do not pay attention to them. So we can see that because the mind is used to think, it is, has become such a strongly ingrained habit. And it can be much easier to be lost in a thought than to be present. One time in a retreat, a meditator said in the practice meeting, "Actually, it's much more fun to be lost in a thought than to be present." Sometimes thoughts can also be an escape in order to escape the present, especially if in the present there is an unpleasant or painful experience. Because yes, it's so much more fun to be lost in an exciting thought than to deal with the nasty pain in the knee or the strong aversion that has arisen. Sometimes thoughts can also be a source of energy, especially when the mind is dull, maybe a bit sleepy, when the mind is lacking energy. So then the mind can open the energy drawer and pull out a juicy thought, maybe a fantasy that we know will be interesting. And so then with that, energy comes back. It's like plugging the plug in a socket and boom, energy is flowing. Then there is another kind of thought that we must be careful of, that we must especially be careful of. And these are thoughts about the Dhamma. You know, they can be so compelling because these thoughts can tell us, well, you know, we are not the usual trivial or greedy or aversive thoughts. You really have to think about the Dhamma. This will really help your practice and deepen your wisdom and increase your compassion. So, you know, these Dhamma thoughts are not bad, you know, just continue to think us. But, you know, in an intensive meditation retreat, we really must be careful about these thoughts and not get sucked into these thoughts, but just see them for what they are. A thought process, thinking process, something happening in the mind. Of course, there are other times when we think and reflect about the Dhamma. For sure, this has its place as well. So once we come to this place where we can really open up to thoughts happening in our mind, to see them as thought processes, then we can feel the relaxation that takes place. And it can be so freeing to have permission, so to speak, to have thoughts, to have thought processes happening. Because with this kind of permission that thoughts can be there, can happen, then we are free from fighting them, or we are free from wanting to suppress them, free from the struggle with the thoughts. And of course, this is such a relief. In my own practice, for me, it was such a relief to hear that even the Buddha, as the awakened one, had still thoughts. You know, as I said in the beginning, somehow I had assumed that the Buddha or any liberated person had no more thoughts. But after a number of years of practice and after a number of years of struggling with the thoughts, I came across a discourse by the Buddha that brought me such a tremendous relief. It was the discourse known as Thoughts Are Known by the Buddha. So at one time, a group of monks were sitting together and starting to talk about the Dhamma. And they started to praise the Buddha's wonderful qualities. But very soon they were interrupted because the Buddha actually himself, he came to this group of monks. And so he sat down and asked them what they were talking about, discussing. And so they said that they were discussing all the wonderful qualities of the Buddha. And the Buddha said, yes, fine. And then from Venerable Ananda, he wanted to know, what kind of qualities they were mentioning, what they were praising. And so Venerable Ananda related all these wonderful qualities of the Buddha. And when he had finished, the Buddha said, yes, but yeah, you can add something to these wonderful qualities. And so he told Ananda, remember this too as a wonderful and marvelous quality of the Tathagata. So when the Buddha was speaking of himself, he was referring to himself as Tathagata. So the Buddha continued to say, for the Tathagata, feelings, Vedana, are known as they arise, as they are present, as they disappear. Thoughts are known as they arise, as they are present, as they disappear. Remember this too, Ananda, as a wonderful and marvelous quality of the Tathagata. So as I said, reading this brought so much relief to me, realizing, oh, a Buddha has still thoughts. But then, yes, as he said, he's aware when they arise, when they are present, and when they disappear. A well-known Tibetan Buddhist master who is still alive, it's Mingor Rinpoche, he has said, the beauty of meditation is to become aware of thoughts, of the process of thinking, to understand the mind's nature to think. Yes, it's really about the understanding of the thought processes, the understanding of the nature of thinking, the nature of the mind. As I've said, what we come to understand is to see that thoughts are a natural occurrence happening in the mind, and that the mind has this capacity to think. So thoughts are neither good nor bad, but they are simply part of our experience as a human being. And even they are part of our experience as a human meditator. So as we are mindful of what is happening we can notice the appearance of a thought. So we might be really present at that moment when the thought pops up. Then we know when it is present. And when we are really present and alert, we also can notice the moment when the thought disappears, when it's gone. And so with this, we come to see the impermanent nature of thoughts. We see their fleeting nature. They are not lasting or enduring entities. Thoughts are not a solid entity, but impermanent. We also come to see that, you know, being mindful of whatever is dominant in our body, heart and mind, that a thought all of a sudden appears, although we had no intention to think this thought, or we had no desire, we didn't want to think this thought. Or else, you know, we notice a thought has arisen and we would like it to disappear right now on the spot. But then very often we have to admit that we cannot make it disappear right now. So with this, we come to see the impersonal nature of these thought processes. And with that, we understand that we have no absolute control over anything. You know, we see the not-self nature. We also see that, you know, these thoughts, it's like they have a life on their own. And as such, you know, they can be tormenting our mind. They can be such a nuisance. And with that, we can become more and more disenchanted with the thoughts. Or, you know, the fact that they come and go, that we cannot hold on to them, especially when they are nice thoughts. So this shows the unsatisfactory nature of thoughts, or the unreliable nature of thoughts, which is the dukkha characteristic. So in our practice of meditation, how should we observe thoughts? How can we do that? You know, when a thought arises, there are several possibilities of dealing with them. One, you know, which is usually caused by habit, is to identify with the thought, to identify with the story, with the content of the thought, and then to be carried away by the thought. Or else, when a thought arises, we may resist the thought. We don't want it. We want to suppress it. We want to push it away or to get rid of it. Or else, when a thought arises, we can simply observe it. We can simply be present with the fact that thinking is happening. And being present with this experience as best as we can without falling into our habitual reactions. So to be aware of thoughts, of the thinking process, is actually not so much different from being aware of other experiences, be it the breath or painful sensation or a mental image or an emotion. But with thoughts, we must be a bit more vigilant because there are different reasons. We must be more vigilant because, you know, we are so easily caught up in the thought, in the story, in the content. And also often we get easily seduced by a thought. And also we easily identify with the thought, identify with the content or the story of the thought. We take it so personal. And because we take it so personal, because of the identification, then we are very quick to react. And very often it's just the habitual reaction. And so very often we find ourselves already in the reaction to the thought and not anymore with the thought itself. So what we should learn is to simply rest our awareness with the thought or with the thought process. You know, it's like an old man sitting on a bench in a park and watching the children play. He just watches the children. He is not lost in the play. So observing thoughts may not feel like meditating at all, because somehow it runs against our ingrained notion of what meditation should be, namely to get rid of thoughts or to have less thoughts, or, you know, thoughts, when thoughts are present, they prevent me from meditating. Only when the thoughts are gone can I really meditate. The Tibetan word for meditation is gom, or something like this. I don't know if my pronunciation is correct. But apparently this word means to become familiar with. So meditation means to become familiar with what is happening in our mind and body. Of course, including our thought processes. So then what is the difference between just ordinary thinking and thinking during meditation? Awareness or mindfulness makes all the difference. You know, if you are lost in a thought, if you are overwhelmed with a thought, if you are identified with a thought, if you get carried away with a thought, you know, then we are not meditating. But if we are aware that thinking is occurring, if we know that a thought process is happening in our mind, then we are meditating. It's a fine line, but it makes such a huge difference. So with our practice of meditation, we do not want to destroy the faculty of thinking, you know, far from it. But what we want to do with the practice of Vipassana meditation is to understand the nature of the thought processes. And with that, we also get to understand the nature of the mind. And with the growing understanding of what kind of thoughts run through our mind, and with our discernment, with our wisdom, then we can weaken those thoughts which are harmful, unskillful, unwholesome, and we can strengthen and further cultivate those thoughts which are helpful, beneficial, and wholesome. So we can gain some mastery over our mind, over our thoughts. And this brings a tremendous relief. And this brings freedom, because we are no longer simply slaves to our thoughts or the reactions to our thoughts. I want to close this talk with a little quote by Chetsunma Tenzin Palmo, an English nun who has been ordained in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition for many, many, many years. She's quite a wonderful being. I have met her several times. She's very inspiring. So she said, you know, imagine you're all in a meditation hall together with each other. So Tenzin Palmo, imagine that there is a loudspeaker attached to your mind and everybody could hear whatever everybody else is thinking. Let's sit quietly for some moments. Thank you for your kind attention. And now let's chant the sharing of blessings. To dedicate and share all the goodness that we are cultivating, strengthening with our practice, sharing it with all living beings, so that our practice becomes a source of happiness and well-being to others as well. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth and the Lord of death. May those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. So may thoughts no longer be an impediment to our meditation practice, but become a source of insight and wisdom and lead to full awakening for the welfare of all sentient beings. Thank you.